B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Want to sing, Murray?
Hey, sure, why not? We're giving Belichick some A's.
I think I'll go for a walk outside now. The summer sun's calling my name.
Hey, Murray!
I hear you now. I just can't stay inside all day.
The sun's out.
I gotta get out, get me some of those rays.
Woo!
Everybody's smiling.
Yeah.
Sunshine day. Everybody's laughing. Sunshine day. Everybody seems so happy today. Let's
you.
Give Belichick an A.
It's your kind of day, Paulie Paul. A's all around.
Absolutely. I was just thrilled. I got to tell you guys, I was tickled when I was driving in here listening to you guys talk about all the great things that are going on in Foxborough.
Exactly.
That was tremendous.
Good, positive commentary.
Michael, I thought you were off the reservation for good. It was nice to have you back.
Nope. Yep. Here we are. As Maz said, I want back on the boat. Paulie Paul.
Maz said another thing that almost caused him to swerve into the guardrail.
Which was that?
About everything coming out of his pot today.
The stupid pills.
Yeah, he took his stupid pills this morning. Every time he opens his mouth, it sounds like it's coming out his ass.
The Celtics should contend this year, and Bill Belichick the last 3 years as a GM deserves an A. And I could be talked into an A-, but it's in the A range. I think he's done way more good than bad.
I like that. I could be talking 20 miles.
Well, you know what? As I went back through it, there were, you know, a few misses in there. And the drafts have not
paid
off.
Where were you like 2 months ago? I had an opening. Andy Hart left. I had an opening. You would have been perfect.
What do you think, Paul? How's he done?
Probably a little in between you and Maz. I think he's been solid. I think that there's been plenty of moves that have been excellent, and it starts with Gilmore. I heard you guys breaking them all down. I think Gilmore has really been instrumental in what they've been able to do defensively. You know, this season, and I think it was all built around that. But, you know, Jim, like a D, really?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And I'm not coming off that.
I'm not.
He's completely boned the wide receiver group year after year, and the
now,
drafts have sucked.
Michael, on your side, I do think there were some of the moves that you put in the positive category. I think you overstayed a little bit.
Daron Harmon.
Well, you know, Danny Shelton. I mean, he's a guy that was a healthy scratch in the playoffs at times and was on the street for a couple of months. They brought him back. He's a part-time player. He's doing fine. This is not to bash Danny Shelton, but yep, to put him in the A category, you know, as another one, you know, I mean, I think that's overstating it a bit. But I think for the most part, the best moves that Bill has made, I think, over the last couple of years are knowing the guys to not worry about chasing the dollar. You know, the Trey Flowers, Malcolm Butler.
Nate Solder,
good one. Even Trent Brown. Because yeah. I think Trent Brown is, the legal stuff pending is, I mean, I don't think anybody foresaw that. But the reputation that he had leaving San Francisco sort of screamed, do not give this guy big money. So, of course, the Raiders gave him big money.
Right.
Because that's what they do. So I think that's what Bill really has been at the top of his game, knowing when to just sort of pull back and say, I can replace that guy for a much better value.
Yes, well, I mean, the whole jumping off point here is, you know, the Antonio Brown thing, which I think was a bad move and blew up in his face pretty badly.
Yep.
And now Michael Bennett, which is not as bad, but certainly isn't trending good. And I think it's sort of easy to do what Murray's doing, saying, boy, he's really porked him. I just think the good moves have outweighed the bad ones. But these two are problematic.
Yeah, and especially if you're not able to make another move now in the next week and a half. Up until the trade deadline because of that. Now, I know that they can, but will they? And, you know, because now you're talking about real money, not cap dollars. It's I'm going to probably have to make a move or two to create cap space, and that costs money to do, and then you're going to have to take on whatever salary that you acquire. So I do think there's a chance that some of the moves, you know, the Antonio Brown specifically, could cost you an opportunity to go after somebody else.
You know what I find most stunning about the whole thing? And this relates to Brown and obviously now Bennett, as you said, Mike, is that the one thing they preach year in and year out that they do not ever compromise is flexibility and versatility on the field and off. Like, they want to be able to move. They don't like being locked in. They want to be able to move the pieces around. And in this case, they boxed them. They boxed themselves in. It is so un-Belichick-like and so unpatriot-like, Paul, for them to end up in this spot where they have to do, you know, handstands and backflips to be able to get a guy on the roster.
I mean, I'll give you even a much more minor example than Antonio Brown, but like even the whole Ben Watson situation. You let him go and you save some money, then you have to re-sign him, which cost you money. Like to, you know, to bring him back. And it might be a net gain based on the first time. I don't know. I don't have all the parameters of the contract in front of me.
But you signed him too much in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. My guess is that you probably had to give him something. If he came back, he probably asked for some guarantees, you know, to come. You just cut me. So I don't want to just be on a string here. So, yeah, I mean, that's a minor one because I don't think that's, you know, I think Antonio Brown, when all is said and done, you're looking at $9 or $10 million. That's a significant.
Not to mention they had to cut Watson the first time for financial reasons.
Exactly. Right. So real money situation there. What's your take on the Bennett story?
Yeah, you know, when we had the email chain going this morning, and I just in trying to piece it together, and this is not necessarily from anybody that I talked to. I do have a little bit of knowledge in terms of the timing. And Tony, I heard you mention it. That's definitely Collins came after Bennett. It was like 2 months after. But also, I think might be a little bit interesting to note that, you know, the whole shift in defense came after, you know, Greg Schiano was going to be the defensive coordinator. And I think Gerard Mayo came in. But then when Collins comes in, and, you know, this whole 4-3, 3-4, I don't really think they run either one of them. I think it's a lot of two man fronts and a lot of guys standing up in sub packages. And I don't know if that was because of Mayo. I don't know if it's because Collins came in and it's been so much more effective than maybe they envisioned. But it was pretty clear in the spring that Collins was going to be a big part of the defense. You could tell even when they weren't in pads, he was out there doing everything, all kinds of situations. So I think, you know, to Maz's point about the versatility and the flexibility, that's where you see it with those linebackers. And I think if you have Hightower, Van Noy, and Collins, maybe they just want to accentuate their abilities. Because I think when Bennett was on the field, he looked pretty good. I think he looks quick. He doesn't look like a guy who's unmotivated. He doesn't look like a fat and happy, I got my contract, I'm not.
When he's playing.
When he's out there on the field, it hasn't been that. I think he's 35% and obviously declining. But he's been productive when he's been on the field. I just think that they look at it and they don't feel like they have to have him out there because they want these linebackers doing all these different things.
Three snaps in the first half?
Oh, it's weird. I don't have an answer for you in all of the criticisms. They clearly decided Adam Butler is more beneficial to them. But really, when you look at all of them, Guy, Shelton, Butler, they're playing 40%, 45%. They're all part-time players. Now, Bennett is the least of the part-time players. He's down around 30, 35. And again, like you said, he played garbage time last game. He got all his snaps when the game was over. I don't know exactly what the answer is. And
do you think he's gone?
I don't. I don't think you have to. I wouldn't be surprised if they trade him, but I'm not saying that you have to dump him, and I wouldn't be surprised if Bill looks at it exactly the way you guys described it. Like,
wait it out.
Yeah, I mean, if I can't get something for him, I'm not just going to give him away. Unless he becomes a real, real pain in the background. And if he goes, maybe that will be the case. We'll see.
So when you were up in your office there putting together your Patriots.com reports, did you hear the furniture flying across the meeting room and everything? Did you hear the beef?
No. No.
You know, can you hear him down there? Can you hear what's going on?
No.
Down there?
That's,
like through the ceiling?
We're as far Perillo's right upstairs. Yeah. We're as far away from that stuff now as we've ever been. It's even done.
No, that's by design.
You think?
So they don't want that big-eared weasel Perillo near us.
Okay, we don't want those Patriots.com guys around.
Your thoughts on the Jalen Ramsey trade?
I'm generally a guy that doesn't overvalue draft picks. I would trade a first-round pick for a lot of guys. I think, you know, you always hear people, Stephon Diggs, I'll tell you. Would you trade a first round?
No.
What? Why? First round pick. You hope out of a first round pick you get a guy like Stephon Diggs. But two?
Thank you. Two.
That's steep. Two first round picks for a really good corner. And I really think Jalen Ramsey is an excellent corner. And I think he'll be motivated. I think the Rams will get a lot out of him. But two first round picks. And I saw something last night. I think Field Yates from ESPN. This is going to be, if they don't trade back in, this is going to be five straight years.
Whoa.
They will not have a first-round pick.
So this is what, like, I feel like they're panicking to stuff this window, meaning, you know, we can debate what you think Jared Goff is, but they signed him. He's their guy. They have a young head coach, a young quarterback. They've built something there. Like, why not just be a little more patient and play it out for the long haul for a nice 5-10 year run?
Yeah.
But it feels like they're panicking and saying we got to do something in the next couple or we're done, which I don't get.
And what I think is strange, and not to play Murray's side of the street because I don't, you know, overly agree with his Goff take, but the problem is 90% on offense right now. Detroit late last year, Chicago, and then obviously the Patriots completely pants them on the game's biggest stage. That offense hasn't been the same since last December, and it hasn't been the same this year. Even when they've scored 30, it hasn't looked the same. They've struggled. Part of it is Goff. Part of it is they can't rely on the running game
their
as much anymore.
Bad too.
The line has deteriorated. I mean, against San Francisco, Goff was running for his life. I watched a lot of that game.
They got manhandled.
Absolutely. San Francisco's defensive line absolutely controlled that game. And they're trading Marcus Peters, getting Ramsey back. It's like, you know, you had to put Tlaib on IR. What are they doing with the defense? I think the problem's on the other side. So to your point, Mike, it's like you're trying to cram it all in this window. I don't think they've done anything to help their cause this year in the short term. And clearly, when you trade two first-round picks for a player, that's a short-term kind of a goal in mind. I don't think they've done anything to improve themselves.
Okay, so I sort of tie it together with the Bennett thing. I don't know, Paul, if you've looked at this, but it feels like the trade deadline in the NFL has gotten a little more active in the last couple of years since they moved it back. And so my guess is that they can't trade Michael Bennett. No one wants to trade for him. There might be a team that, you know, they might be sitting there saying, well, you're going to release him anyway, so why am I trading you anything?
Yeah, no one's strong, though. I mean, someone that, I mean, like a Seattle, I think, might be interested. But you look at it now with the Bennetts in general. But this, I mean, was it four or five teams now? This will be his fifth team if he gets traded. And the other thing, too, is, you know, he's a 33-year-old pass rusher making $8 million a year. So let's call it four, you know, for half a season. And, you know, a third of the teams are out of it. So that shrinks the pool.
I don't think you're trading the guy.
I don't think there's a huge market for him.
Me neither.
But you might be able to find someone like Pete might be comfortable with him and take him back at Seattle.
Pete would love to have him again.
Yeah, I mean, so you don't think that was... I mean, I think that there's a chance for that.
Okay, so do I. I think it's limited.
But I don't think you're getting much in return. That's the thing.
Yes, exactly right. If anything. So we'll pick this up with your calls. Anything you want Pats related with Paul Perillo right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Nash on Boston's home for sports.
I think everybody's always concerned about how their boss is going to, you know, take into consideration if something happens back home. But when you have a boss who respects you as a man, it's easy to go out and play for him like that. And I think for me, that's easy to look him in the eye. And whatever he asks me to do, I'll do it simply because I know that he respects me as a human being, and I respect that.
Yeah, Michael Bennett comment again. I said it at the time. That was a nice, flowery, positive comment. I said, watch out. Watch out. One of these guys is going to treat me like a man. What's he going to say when you take away his playing time or he doesn't get his way? They're not treating me like a man. Just problem. I just feel like the Bennetts are pain in the balls waiting to happen. But either way, I don't think you're going to be able to trade him for much, if anything. So at this point, we're better off just waiting to see if he gets his head screwed on straight and starts playing for you because the potential is still there. We were saying before, Paul, don't you get the sense that he's someone who could rise to the occasion in a big game and be there in a big game?
Absolutely.
And, like, he's that kind of guy?
Yeah, I had a whole thing today on our show on Patriots.com where I said, I mean, you know how this all unfolds. You know how it always kind of works out. Like, I could see him with a huge strip sack in the AFC Championship game when they need to get the ball back. And everybody's like, see, Bill knew. That's why he knew.
The best game of Dalis Thomas ever played here was the 07 Super Bowl.
He played great.
So
I mean, in the Super, when he was with Seattle, Bennett, the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Oh, he could not block him.
Oh, my gosh. He was a home wrecker. He was just, you know, completely wrecking the offense in a lot of ways.
Okay, your thoughts with Paulie Paul Perillo. We've got Eric in Marble. You're up next. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Yeah, my take is that I think Belichick, the coach, the arrogance of Belichick, the coach, gets in the way of him as a GM making logical and objective decisions. Kind of like when he's trying to make a GM decision, it's like this little coach devil's on his shoulder saying, don't worry about it. I can coach him. I can coach him. We'll take care of this. Like Antonio Brown is a big situation, and also
Bennett
with the wide receivers. So I feel like the GM is affected by the success of the coach, and that's why he's an average GM.
So he's an above average GM.
Yeah.
He's well above average.
Yes.
Okay. So that's silly to call him an average GM. But I think Bill does think, yeah, we'll get him to buy in. We get everyone to buy in. And he can't, you know, he didn't get Antonio Brown to buy in, and he hasn't gotten Michael Bennett to buy in yet.
Right. So usually, though, when they do that, Paul, they have leverage over the guys.
Well, that's what makes Brown different.
Right.
Is that what,
yeah. I was going to say, and in the case of Bennett got a raise. He got more money, too. Both of those guys got money. And so I just wonder if, you know, for whatever reason, Bill just kind of, you know, let it go a little there. And didn't, you know, to me, that is a case where he really bet on his coaching more than he should have, because in the past he's been able to coach guys that he's had leverage over who needed, you know, had to play for their money.
Yeah, this time and I think he's gotten way. I mean, more often than not, I think that he's been able to get away with those kind of things when they haven't worked out. They've pulled the ripcord and been fine, you know, as a result, because I think his coaching has been so strong, his locker room has been so strong, these things haven't hurt them. But you know, it's always nice when you have Brady to sort of make, you know.
And that's another
clean up after the mess,
exactly.
If needs.
Steven, Steven Dartmouth, what do you got?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to touch on Neil Harry. I think they just designated him from IR. And my question to you guys is, do you think it's a blessing in disguise that he got to sit for the first half of the season? That way he got to learn a little bit, watch what the other players were doing, and not mess up with Brady's trust. That way he comes right in and is effective. Thank you. Have a good day.
No, I don't feel that.
I don't either.
Go ahead.
There's no replacement for the experience that he needed to get. Yeah, I mean, he was able to sit and watch, but he wasn't able to do anything, you know, practically with the team. So, yeah, I don't ever think missing that time is a blessing in disguise.
And just as a matter as a young of guy. Clarification, he has not been activated from the IR.
But he's been designated as one of the guys.
So
Once
you start practicing, that's one of the guys.
Yeah. So he's now but he can't play for another couple of weeks, but he can practice for
correct.
The next couple of weeks. So I think, especially with this quarterback, a young player not being out there, no, not good.
Yep.
It takes a lot for Brady to let you in. And so, you know, N'Keal Harry's starting, if not from ground zero, pretty damn close to it.
Now, if you look for a blessing in disguise, and again, this is not what you want, but what could end up happening is if Josh Gordon is in any way limited when Harry is eligible, that might force Brady to look at Harry as a legitimate option, as opposed to Harry's there for insurance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
They're a similar kind of body type. It would, you know,
boundary receiver.
It would sort of make sense if they ask Harry to do some of the things that Gordon was doing. And if Gordon's out and Harry has to play, then maybe Brady has to get him involved.
Mike in Connecticut, what are your thoughts?
Hey, guys. So I'm kind of with Maz when he was saying, if I'm a Rams fan today, I am, like, hyped to get Ramsey. We can't forget this guy was, a key cog on the defense. That was a third and long incompletion from Amendola beating us at home. So, I mean, he's like, elite, like, 1-2-3 elite. So he's that guy that can take away your number one guy, take away half the field. And when you guys know, when you have a guy like that, that front seven, I mean, I know we think Wade Phillips kind of sucks, but as a D coordinator, I think he's a pretty good guy. That front set, it opens up so much stuff for the front seven. And you consider the game against Seattle, field goal away from winning. If Goff wasn't complete garbage against Tampa and just, like, not completely horrible against Tampa, this team's 5-1 right now. So I think Ramsey makes the Rams a guy.
Yeah, it's a big stretch. But that's, again, it comes down to their offense. And even if you don't look at Goff like I do and realize, wow, this stupid puppet can't do anything, and he had his chance, and he'll never get back to the Super Bowl again, their offensive line has been in shambles, and the offense overall hasn't been all that great really since the Super Bowl. So there's a real issue there. They need help on that side of the ball. Ramsey really didn't do anything, especially for them this year.
And the offense goes back further than
right.
that,
too. And so I think it's beyond personnel. They figured out that Fakakta stupid thing that he does with the same personnel out there. Every snap just sort of moved around. Was it three receivers, one back, whatever that thing is? It's the same.
Three by one, yeah.
It's the same thing every snap. The coordinators are too good, and they're going to catch up to that. So you got to, I mean, maybe it's on McVay a little bit.
Well, and a lot of it.
I think it is.
A lot of it seemed to be the offense went as Todd Gurley did in a lot of ways because they used him as a pass receiver, but he's like on one leg now, and I loved him, but he seems cooked.
Well, and they said that on the game broadcast last week, too. That
first-round running back.
Yes,
cooked
I
after
know.
After three, 4 years.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jeez.
But that at its core, that Rams offense is really a running offense. They want to run the ball.
Correct.
And so, you know, with Gurley, that's a huge...
Well, that's their problem.
That's a huge setback.
But it's Gurley and the line, though. Jim is right.
No, the line
has deteriorated a
brutal.
Little bit.
Benji and Worcester, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys. So I wanted to chime in on Belichick as a GM. I really think he's done an A job in the last three seasons. And the biggest reason why you guys keep bringing up the linebackers, so particularly like Hightower, Van Noy, Collins, how much do you think they're getting paid combined this year?
A ton, if you include Hightower. A lot.
$13 million for those three all-pro potentially linebackers. $13 million for those three.
And yeah, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I think.
I mean, they're worth it. I'm not
the production you're getting.
I'm not suggesting they're not worth it. I think that's the backbone of the defense. And right now, you have the best defense in football. But let's not make that out to be that's like peanuts.
It's not, Benji. That's actual real money. I mean, see. I mean, I look at it differently. You're sort of looking at it in this classic Patriots thing that look at all the value they're getting. They're paying them nothing and getting this great value. I think it's harder, or I'm more impressed the money they spent on defense that's actually paying off. Because I thought the Gilmore money was too much and he wouldn't be worth it. I thought when you re-signed Hightower for those numbers and the way that he played in some of the early seasons after the extension, like, oh, that's going to come back to bite you. And the money you gave, I mean, Van Noy's making real money right now.
I mean, I'll give you an example.
And so it's like they're worth it. To me, that's almost harder.
Hightower was, and I don't have the numbers right off the top of my head, but something like 4-40.
Yes, 4-45, yeah.
45, okay. He was on the... He went to several free agent visits and didn't really get offers.
Right. Failed Pittsburgh, physicals. The Jets.
Yes. So, like, they kind of bid against themselves with
yeah.
that. You know, so you can't do that and then say, he's making nothing. You know, look at the value. Jamie Collins is a guy they got to come back on.
Right. Know, they let someone else pay him, and then they got him back at a good rate.
They took a flyer on him on a good rate. I mean, that's an excellent rate. And I know there are some really high-priced – you know, Bobby Wagner's and Luke Kuechly's out there that make a lot of money, but that's a pretty good linebacker group, and they're being paid. I mean, Hightower and Van Noy are being paid pretty well.
I'll tell you, of all the moves you've rattled off, and the linebacking core is, you know, I mean, they've been tremendous this year. To me, the move that Bill doesn't get enough credit for is Gilmore. When you weigh it all out.
This is where I started.
I know, but we went through it quickly and said, great move. Look at where the thing's going. Jalen Ramsey's going to hold out, or he's going to get franchise tagged. Someone just gave up two first-round picks for him. Like, the cost for that position is going through the roof because there aren't that many good ones anymore. He got the guy ahead of time. He saw it all developing.
Tony's right. Think about when that deal was signed, how many of us said,
we all went,
no
whoa.
Way, but there's no way he'll say, that's a fake contract. There's no way he'll say, do you think they're going to let him go after this
no.
year?
No.
Not the way he's playing.
I mean, he was way ahead of the curve on that one, way ahead.
Belichick's done better GM work than we've given it credit for the last couple of years.
Maybe you.
It has. Yeah, maybe me, right, because I was prepared to say that he won in spite of Belichick, the GM. It's not the case.
Well, he's a better coach than GM, and somehow that is perceived as being a shot at his ability to be the GM. I think he's an excellent GM, too, but he is not
special,
even arguably, in my mind, the greatest coach that's ever done it. I don't think that's an exaggeration at all, and I don't care where I work, I'll fight you all.
to quote
the Thanksgiving, that's coming up soon, too.
It is.
To quote the Thanksgiving guy, I'll fight you all. He's the greatest coach who's ever done it.
I don't think anybody's disagreeing with you on that one. I mean, his coaching ability is peerless. There is nobody like him.
And so, right, the GM work is not up to that standard, but it's good. It's really good. It's been better than we've given it credit for. I've given it credit for the last couple of years.
I think a lot of people are in your boat.
Here's Murray's update, and then we're right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
For sports, Felger Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Paul Perillo, Patriots.com, joining us here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Thoughts on a couple of league items. League item number one, officiating this season in the NFL.
Oh. You know, I think last week we talked about, and I said, you know, I was sort of, you know, take developing. Defense is kind of taken over.
Yep.
Well, I had a whole epiphany after the weekend. The defenses are definitely playing better. There's no question. Some of these offenses, we talked about the Rams a lot in the last segment, are definitely coming back to earth. But the penalties are all on the offense. Holding is up. Offensive pass interference is up. Well, no kidding the defenses are playing better. It's first and 20 all the time. That's what they've decided to do to curtail the offense.
And see, Paul, I don't get that either because, again, typically the rules changes that have been happening in recent years have been to help the offense.
Right. So and I think they've probably heard that a lot, and this was a market correction.
Yeah, maybe too much of one.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. Again, the number of flags being thrown, it's brutal. It's brutal to watch.
No one wants to watch that. And you know, I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek. It's not – the defenses have played better, especially here. But the penalties, it's one thing if you watch the replay, like, yeah, it's too bad that took away a huge play, but you had to call that. But no, we're watching replays and we're like, that's what you call illegal hands to the face? They missed that pass interference? I got to tell you, the whole pass interference thing didn't bug me as much as it bugged a lot of people, but I never envisioned that it would be irrelevant. Is it something like 48 and there have been like six overturned or something like that.
Yeah.
I watch these things and I wonder if they would have overturned the one that they missed that caused this whole thing.
It's fair.
Because, I mean, I've seen some blatant pass interferences that I watch on replay. Contact is well before the ball gets there and they're not overturning.
Who do you blame? Are the refs incompetent? Is Al Riveron incompetent? Is it the competition committee overreaching with points of emphasis? Who do you blame?
For the whole thing?
Yeah.
Largely Al Riveron. And I think that spot at the top is steadily declined from Pereira to Blandino to now Riveron. I don't think that this guy is in control. I think he actually has more power than those guys did because of the way everything is done now. And
in New York,
it's all centrally located. And he's I just don't think that he – and I think the Twitter, you know, I don't know. Do you follow any of that stuff? Who am I asking? Some of the stuff that they put on Twitter, just I think further exacerbates
the league.
The league, it's NFL officiating. Riveron himself puts little videos out there and explains, and then you watch and you're like, well, that's not what happened. I'm watching the play right here. You made it convenient for me because you included the clip, and what you were saying happened didn't happen. You know, I don't know. I blame him. I think that he is part of the problem, but it's probably the pass interference thing. I think is widespread. I think they said we're going to have to do something about this because we can't have that. We can't just not do anything, but don't change anything. And I almost like I made a joke today. I wonder if like did they take a crew a week and say, all right, it's your turn, Craig Rolstad, overturn a pass interference this week. Good job. You know, let's see if we can get one. Just to say, you know, you can't just say that none of them ever get overturned. Right. You know, one every week for a crew, and you know we'll be doing okay. I don't like it. I don't like when the officials are as part of a bigger part of the story. And you know, the market correction I joked about. I would expect to see that over the next few weeks. Watch the hue and cry that came this week after all those flags Monday night. Now you'll see them disappear a little bit.
It's coming soon. There's no question.
It has to. Again, they can't go at this pace. It's just way too much laundry on the field. Way too much.
Second league item, as Murray has mentioned in his updates, Roger Goodell confirmed that the league, the owners, in other words, and the NFLPA are discussing currently a expansion of the regular season from 16 to 17 games per team. 8 home, 8 road, 1 neutral site. As we've talked about before, that probably comes with a tweaking of the playoff format to add one wild card team per conference, which means you go from two bye teams to one bye team. Your thought on that whole format there, Paul?
Yeah, I don't mind that as much. I think the 17 games with the one game, in a neutral site, I think that could work. I'm curious. I try not to be too close-minded. I would like to see the playoffs expanded by another team, but it probably waters it down a little bit too much. I don't like the byes.
You don't like two bye teams?
I don't like two bye teams. I would like to see the elimination of the bye, but this is probably as close to a compromise as you can get. Make it one and see how it goes. I wanted to ask you guys before we continue on this topic. You guys had a lot of the flag talk yesterday, and I was listening. I was really interested in Lifshatz when he was talking about the number. Did we ever get any numbers off of that?
Oh, yeah.
With the spread mattering?
I did have someone text me last night.
And whatnot.
And Lifshatz's numbers, as I expected, were low. He said that only 7% of all games non-primetime were affected
like
by the spread.
Mattered.
Yeah, and he was low. It's not super high. I mean, it's under 20%. It's between 15 and 20%. I'll double check it and see if I can get the exact numbers for you, but it's not 7%. Still, eight out of 10 games, the spread doesn't factor
and then
in.
Prime
but that's
time
okay,
it does,
but
though.
It's a dramatic difference in primetime games?
No. So I'm glad you brought that up,
That's
too.
The part of it that piqued my interest.
That the rate actually in primetime or in daytime is comparable. Very comparable.
Okay.
I'll see if I can get it if you want to just talk for a
minute. Yeah, it's okay.
I mean, and I don't mean any disrespect to Dan because I like Dan.
Yeah.
I think he's really entertaining to listen to and talk about this stuff. But in general, when I talk to my gambling buddies, my Everett boys, there's a lot of those. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Vegas wanted this. That's
the trend. You got to, that's what the sharps are saying. And then you look into it and it's almost never the way that they, and you're like, how come you're still living in your parents' house? and this is not a shot at Dan and Joe. I like both of those guys a lot. So, and I know they put a lot of work and effort into it. So I don't mean to demean them.
We should follow up on that stuff from Lifshatz yesterday. But the 17 games, I'm all for it. I'm all for more inventory. I think they can handle another week.
Yeah, I think 17's a good compromise.
Yeah, sure. They've already ruined the sport. Why not further it? Yeah, add more.
Just a ray of sunshine.
I like one bye.
You're wonderful.
To me, you got to make teams fight for that bye a little bit more. And the idea of giving two, I think this is a little bit of an anti-Patriot thing. They get one of those two byes every year. I mean, and I'm not,
But they're always one, so what's the difference?
Well, no, not last year, were they?
No, last year was an anomaly.
Okay, so I just wonder if they're toughening it up a little because one team is dominated too
much. I
think
that's a distant second, third, or fourth to more revenue with more games.
Well, sure, of course.
I think if anything, you want to start talking about all that primetime stuff, Green Bay the other night, they like Green Bay. What do you think they like? What do you think they think about the Patriots deep down, where they don't talk about at parties?
They like
Patriots
or don't like.
Patriots are great for business.
It is?
Oh, are you kidding me? The amount of attention the Patriots, the whole country roots against them. You need that team. Are you kidding me?
So the refs favor the Patriots. I mean, that's been obvious for years.
That's not what I said.
That's what I said.
I'm telling you, I think that there's a lot of business to be made.
That's what you're implying.
No, there's
that's
a lot
okay.
of business to be made.
You speak
with
the truth, Paul.
The Patriots having success.
I mean, I think in Kansas
good
City
for business.
Last year was
God bless
ridiculous.
America. The Patriots win again.
My God. That thing with the Chiefs, that was, you're right, that one was blatant. A long commercial-free segment is next. We'll get back to your calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Nice shot, Mass. And you keep wrecking
really
on
it. Same spot. Yeah. The same spot. I hit that clip. It's just to the left of the clip.
Sure.
Hakeel Harry?
Oh, Nikhil Harry.
Nikhil?
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Nikhil. I'm sorry, Nikhil.
Yeah.
Nikhil in this case is spelled N apostrophe K-E-A-L. Nikhil.
Who's he play for?
N'Keal Harry's from Arizona State, Maz.
Ooh.
He goes at 6'3 and 5'8.
Oh, they could use some size with the Lilliputians they have.
6'3 and 5'8, 216 pounds, strong points. Harry has great size with long arms.
Oh, great.
Well-built and strong, explosive athlete with speed, quick feet, change of direction, flexibility, and body control.
Downside, can't catch the ball.
Weak points. He's fast, but not in the 4-3 range fast. I don't care about that.
Me neither.
If he isn't the primary, there are times Harry doesn't give maximum effort. Welcome to the wide receiver position.
Typical receiver.
Yep. He did not play in Arizona State's bowl game. Because he sat out. Good for him.
Yeah, who wants to?
Makes him smart. Put him on the board. I think we have a chance there.
Or selfish.
N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State. Put him on the Felger and Maz big board.
N'Keal.
With the 32nd pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select N'Keal Harry, wide receiver, Arizona State.
Again, we're talking about Bill Belichick's work as a GM. The draft has not been so hot the last 3 years. It's been really minimal impact on this team of what you've gotten out of the last three drafts, but that could go either way now as you go forward. If they get Isaiah Wynn back, I mean, they like really need Isaiah Wynn. And this guy, N'Keal Harry, these two guys, Paul, I think a lot is riding on these two.
Especially Wynn, right? I mean, I think Newhouse has done a decent enough job filling in, but obviously not ideal. And I think the line is becoming increasingly a problem over the last few weeks. And I think part of that is sort of exacerbated by the fact that they don't have as many trusted targets for Brady. And I think that Tom likes to deal with the rush by getting rid of the ball so quickly. Well, right now it's really just Edelman that he can feel comfortable doing that with. So I do think both of those guys coming back have the potential to help. And I agree with you, Mike. I think they need them to pan out. I think Wynn especially needs to be a starting caliber left tackle and no longer be a concern at that spot. He needs to play well and stay healthy.
He is. He's the big one for me. And then if I were Belichick, I'd still go out and try to get something at the deadline.
Again, Trent Williams again today was sort of rebuffed. Is that one of the words, I think, Jim, one of your updates? Was that from
Bruce Allen? So the Browns GM, John Dorsey, apparently had a conversation with Bruce Allen, the Redskins GM, and they're still spitefully not trading him.
Tell you what, the Redskins are stupid.
They're a-holes.
Oh, God.
It's solid spite hate, though. You have to, I mean, you
a part of me, kind of respects it.
You would respect that.
Yes. But I hate it because I want them on the Patriots.
I know you well. And I first know that of you all, like that stuff.
First of all, they suck. Secondly, look at what the premium positions are going for.
Oh, my God, you're getting good prices.
I mean, really, and again, you're talking about a premium spot in the league.
Left tackle just went for two first-round picks, Houston to Miami.
Right, exactly.
And I think I told you that I think that's what it would take. I told you guys about a month and a half ago. I think this is a guy, Trent Williams, that could be worth that. Two first-round picks.
And they're saying no just to spite the guy, to keep him in jail.
Stupid.
So Dan Snyder.
Meanwhile, they suck, and they're not going anywhere for the next 2 years anyway.
So them. Let's wrap up with a few calls here for Paul Perillo. Doug in the car. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. So, okay, the Antonio Brown trade was a horrible trade, but losing Demaryius Thomas isn't the reason, and here's why. Because at the time, you guys were drooling all over what a great move it was to trade Demaryius Thomas and keep Gunnar Olszewski on the roster.
Yeah.
So, like,
you guys were applauding
it? You spent an hour on what a great move that was.
Well, I don't like Demaryius Thomas.
How are you going to nail him for it now?
Oh, okay.
Well, so I mean,
don't let me in on that.
Well, don't let me in on what?
On getting rid of Demaryius Thomas.
Oh, I didn't like it. I mean, I didn't mind it at the time. I don't like Demaryius Thomas at all.
But it's fine. I just said, don't let me in on it.
I don't have much of it. I don't think Demaryius Thomas is a difference maker anymore. I mean, I'm not crying over that, but I do feel like that was a guy that Tom certainly appeared to have accepted into his inner circle. And I think that he would have been able to contribute more in the passing game than Gunnar Olszewski will.
So I don't like Demaryius Thomas. I don't need him on my team. But don't tell me that they handled that whole situation well. That's what we're discussing. And how Belichick handled the receiver position by going all in on Antonio Brown, by making that big mistake. They had to let someone go who they actually like. They like Demaryius Thomas. I don't. But they did, for a six-round pick to a division rival, who now is actually playing for the division rival. Like, that's not, don't tell me that that's good personnel work. It's not.
It isn't. And what does he have, like 8 catches and 110 yards the last couple of weeks? That's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, he's been okay. He's been hurt like he typically is. And he had a decent game against Dallas. I caught a little of that game because we were off this week. I got a chance to see some of the other stuff. And, you know, they used all three of those receivers. Robbie Anderson had the big day, but Crowder and Thomas contributed too. I think Darnold gives them a different look.
He recovered the onside kick, Demaryius Thomas.
Oh, almost lost it.
Yeah.
I would not put that on his highlight reel.
No, I would not either.
He got it.
That was shaky. Here's our guy. Here's our guy, Guy in Boston. Hi, Guy.
I got this directed at Mr. Paul Perillo, the Sunshine Man.
I love this guy.
Go ahead. I just want to know how much Bill Belichick is paying you to kiss his butt.
Not enough. Not enough. Thank you. I love that guy. I love that guy. Bill, what do you think? Bill, people want to know, how much are you paying me?
I've been kissing Bill's butt all day. But I did. I didn't enter wanting to do that. I entered into the thing
from a spot of hate,
saying that
a spot of wanting to facilitate discussion.
Not true. That the coach overcomes the GM. That Bill screwed the pooch with Antonio Brown and Michael Bennett. He signed a lot of bad contracts, and he's winning in spite of himself. And then I went back and looked at it, and the entire defense that is the leader of the team and is why you're a Super Bowl favorite was all built by Bill, and all the decisions were made pretty much in the last couple of years, whether it's bringing a guy in or re-signing guys. And they, you know, that's why you have this defense. So he has to get credit for that.
Okay, so if the offense does him in, though, whose fault is that?
Then get back to me on that.
Okay.
Get back to me on that.
But to Tony's point right there. So let's say, for argument's sake, they fall short and get knocked out in the AFC championship game because they don't have enough offense. Does his job as a GM become worse?
Yeah, well, I'll grade it then. Well, I mean, so look, we just talked about this.
So you're grading it based on how well the team does?
Not necessarily.
It kind of sounds like you're grading it on the fact that they're going to win the Super Bowl again.
Is N'Keal Harry a good pick or not?
I think it was a good pick.
Well, I mean,
we haven't been able to find that out yet because he got hurt.
The real answer is we don't know.
Incomplete. Right.
Incomplete. Isaiah Wynn, good pick or not?
No.
I'd say no at this stage.
Why? Why?
He can't stay on the field.
Because it's now 2 years that he can't stay on the field.
But we haven't seen him play.
So this is really what I'm talking about, Paul. It's not necessarily that they win it or not, but do those guys come back and contribute? And that'll be a big part of, you know, did he build the offense properly or not? So we don't frankly know on those guys.
I would agree. But what if they both come back and contribute and play well and they fall short because they don't have enough offense?
Then I get, you know, you've got to put some of it on them. I mean,
no, I agree, but I think that we're sort of looking at, and I agree overall, I think he's put together, I mean, just look at the last 20 years. I mean,
he's butchered the receiver position the last 2 years. He's butchered it.
Okay,
because the guy got hurt, he butchered the receiver position. That's what I'm saying. He went out and he targeted a guy in the first round and drafted him, and we haven't seen him play, and he gets an F for it.
Yeah, he should have known the guy was, you know.
Because he should have known
that he was built like, that he wasn't
Tarzan?
Yeah,
he's huge.
He should have went with DK Metcalf instead.
No, not even
so
that.
Another guy who's built like Tarzan.
No, but
at least he stays on the field.
I wouldn't even tell you that. I would tell you. So the Bill was banking on a rookie wide receiver being able to click with Tom.
Yeah, he wasn't
Tarzan.
Yeah,
he's huge.
He should have went with DK Metcalf instead.
No, not even
so
that.
Another guy who's built like Tarzan.
No, but
at least he stays on the field.
I wouldn't even tell you that. I would tell you. So the Bill was banking on a rookie wide receiver being able to click with Tom Brady to save the passing game.
Yeah, can I blame Brady for that and not Bill?
To save the passing game?
Yeah, to save it. And passing games on life support.
So if the rookie first round pick was the third receiver, he would have been the savior? Because he would have been behind Gordon and Edelman.
Gordon good enough?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No! Wow. He's not!
You got a lot of work to do in the next hour.
Gordon's not good
enough.
You got to fight
for that A, Mike.
Look, I'm never someone who's...
I gave him a C. Don't look at me.
Who fought for flashy receivers or think this team needs flashy receivers. They've won a crap ton of games without flashy receivers. But now Tommy Boy has fallen into this thing where it feels to me like he only wants flashy receivers. So I'm putting some of that blame on Brady, not on Bill. Okay? And not that the receiver situation is great. But if Brady put a little more faith, a little more trust, worked a little harder with someone like Jacoby Myers, would it be better? Might it be good enough? It might.
Yeah, it does feel like they're missing another option inside. Like, I think that they would have been okay on the outside with Gordon and Harry, but look where they targeted, right? It was Humphreys. It was Beasley in Buffalo. It feels like they wanted to replace Amendola. They wanted someone to go inside so Edelman didn't have to constantly take the beating over the middle, and you're seeing that he's banged up a little bit already. I think that's what they're missing a little bit, but I mean, I still think that they have enough offensively. I think their running backs are deep and excellent, and they're mostly good. And you're even seeing Michelle now contribute as a receiver a little bit. I think they have options that they don't have a tight end, but I think Edelman, Gordon, Dorsett, White, Burkhead, Michelle. There are a lot of teams that don't have.
I mean, it's
don't have that, Paul, that amount of offensive
just quickly.
Options.
It's not necessarily based on the result. We can tell when the team doesn't have enough personnel wise. 06, 2011, 2015. You know, they were undergunned certain years, and you could say that's the roster. There are some years where they had enough talent. The Philly Super Bowl year. They had enough talent to win that game. That wasn't a GM problem. That was a coaching problem or a player problem. So let's see how that all plays out. If it turns out the roster is really not good enough, I think we'll be able to see it. Thanks for coming in.
All right.
Okay.
See you, Pablo.
We got an hour to go. There are no commercials here. Reset our thoughts on Belichick, the GM, the last couple of years. I think he's been pretty good. Surprisingly good when I really looked at it. The Michael Bennett situation. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think you're kind of stuck with him, and I think you basically should just sort of wait for him to get his head screwed on straight because you're not getting anything for him. So that's on the list. We even had a little bit of Celtics chatter before about what this team is and what they can be. Maz is all horny for this kid last night who hit a bunch of three-pointers.
Carson Edwards, I love him.
The little stocky guy. All of a sudden, Maz is all in. He's got like his pants off and his green Schmens are on the table because the kid hit a couple three-pointers.
When's Carson Edwards' poster night? When is that?
It's unbelievable. So we can get back to that as well. All of it. 90 seconds, no commercials. Just
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.